This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And this is Max Rushton.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Well, of course, we built up to the games involving England and Scotland in the Euros tonight. Author and football writer Jonathan Wilson was here. We looked at the tournament overall and the format of it, and he had some interesting stuff to say, didn't he?
Yeah, the point. What is the point?
Yeah, what is the point of it? So we got down to the fundamentals. What are the point of tournament football? Anyway, hope you enjoy that. Christian Volney joined us. He is a Danish football journalist. He was in the stadium last night in Copenhagen for that amazing result against Russia. We'll hear from him. And we spoke to a guy called David Little, a Scotland fan, who had a bit of a quirky idea
a good
around
quest
this year. A good quest, yeah, an epic quest. OK, well, here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Max. Nice to see you again. It's been a couple of week and a bit, hasn't it?
It has. Yeah. I very much enjoyed you and Andy out on the road. I don't know if you've thought about working together before, but I think you've got a real chemistry.
We kind of clicked.
It really did work.
You know how to push Andy's buttons, which are not difficult, obviously. So, yeah.
It was really good. I mean, that before we will talk a lot about England, of course, today, but I thought that Denmark, we were just chatting before we were on air, that moment where the crowd thought that Belgium had scored and then went wild, and then that goal, they, you know, it filtered through that was disallowed for that really tight offside, and then Russia got a penalty, and it was sort of what tournament football is about. And I think, you know, I'm not the first to say it, but no one would begrudge Denmark. Everybody wants Denmark to do something or do well, perhaps the Welsh now.
Well, it's now, you know, obviously when it comes down to it, we've got sort of skin in the game with a lot of these Welsh players. They play for our clubs, we know them, and, you know, I'm delighted Denmark got through. It was a great story, but I want Wales to win at the weekend.
Well, I suppose I'll see. I think I do, but sometimes, you know, you sit, because last night, because I thought the Finns put up such snout defence, didn't they, against Belgium, especially that lad Arayuru, the guy who just grins manically through the whole game like he's won a competition.
He looks very Finnish, doesn't he?
During the anthem. No. Do you notice during the anthem they just stayed on him because he was so happy that they didn't get down the whole team because he was so happy. Then he took one in the undercrackers and then he was still absolutely delighted.
That might have been a grimace.
It might have been.
The Denmark game, as we all know, those who watched or switched over when they realised there was something going on BBC Two, it was a fantastic match. I know there's some lovely moments, and Christian Volney was there and he'll join us later on. He sent us a great little video of that moment. They were all standing in the middle of the pitch. I think everybody felt they were probably getting Christian Eriksen on FaceTime, but they weren't. They were getting live score up so they could see that the Belgium game was over and they were definitely through.
Yeah, I had a lovely message from John, because you noticed that, you know, Russ Den was trending. It's very close to me trending for first time.
Max Russ Den,
John said, I saw you trending. I thought you'd won a birthday spread and got all precious about it. Sadly not. The humiliation will continue after the Euros. It'll continue on Thursday.
Oh, yeah, we'll squeeze one in. It's a rest day, so we're allowed that, I think.
But it was a wonderful... And that Christensen, I mean, you know that phrase, you know, the sort of, when they say the crowd sucked in the ball, you know, it was sucked into there. It felt like that with that Christensen strike. It was so pure, wasn't it?
Yeah, the first goal was a corker as well. Little backlift, as they like to say in football circles.
And he did really well, Damsgaard, as well, considering he's come in for Eriksen and he's got this huge reputation. And I think he's had one sort of reasonable season at Sampdoria.
The good thing is, it'll be a good match because Denmark are very front foot. They're an exciting team to watch, and Wales are as well. I think it's going to be a really good game there.
And they had Højbjerg with a bandage, Kiefer Moore with a bandage. There'll be bandages everywhere.
It was
wonderful.
Good stuff.
Now we have to think about, you know, a soulless one-all draw at Wembley.
I'm very hopeful tonight. I think England, I'm fancying a bit of 2-0 2-0, 3-1. I'm feeling very confident this evening they'll get the job done. You know, the producer was quite surprised I was so confident, based on what exactly? But I think we're better than them. I know they beat us over there, but I think we'll win tonight.
Yeah, interesting to see who Southgate selects. Most of the papers suggesting that Bellingham will come in for Mount, and I do want to see Bellingham, but I'd quite like to see Bellingham deeper,
yeah,
in place of one of Rice or Phillips, and then Grealish in there with Foden, and I would play Sancho as well. But look, we're all the England manager, aren't we? It's difficult. I've said this before. I said it at the weekend that what I think is interesting about this England squad is, there are very few players that would get in every single person starting 11, right? Because everyone, maybe John Stones, maybe Jordan Pickford, because he started well, on form and ability. So some people want to drop Harry Kane. Some people think that's a ridiculous idea.
Yeah.
That everyone's got different ideas for who the fullback should be and who the holding midfielder should be. Because the squad is, it's got lots of very good players. They're all about as good as each other.
Mm.
And I think Gareth Southgate must look at it and go, God, I wish I just had seven that were just automatic starters.
Yeah.
To make his life a bit easier.
If Maguire comes back in tonight, mm-hmm. which I think it looks like he might, I mean, there is that worry that if you just sling him straight into a game against Germany as his first run out, that's not a great idea, is it?
But it's unfortunate for Mings, who's played really well in these two games.
Yeah.
And you'd have to play Maguire on the left of the two.
When we had that set up with Bellingham and Rice, we did see a few times, what game was that, the Austria game? It wasn't. It was the game after the Austria game. We played.
That's a very good question.
The other friendly.
Who do we play in the other friendly?
In the other friendly.
Just before the Euros. So 2 weeks. There's been a lot of football since Sporting.
They did create lots of chances, and a lot of that was when Bellingham was bombing on from that position. Mm. So there is a slight concern. But anyway, look, we'll see. He's a good player, and he offers a threat going forward, and that was the thing. We don't need two sitting in every game all the time, so we'll see what they do. I think we kind of will need to, maybe we'll talk to Jonathan about this, who's joining us in a few moments' time, but you do sort of need to know what went on in this situation that Chilwell and Mount find themselves isolating up to 10 days. It probably can't be what happened on the pitch. It has to be something that happened off the pitch. There's all this talk that they had a long chat in the tunnel.
They just embraced. But they had a game of kabaddi in the tunnel, and that was the problem.
Well, their level of contact, it makes you think that the three of them went into a cupboard and hugged each other for 20 minutes. Yeah. Because that seems to constitute more contact than being on a coach with Billy Gilmore, probably being in the setup afterwards, in Middlesbrough, giving Billy Gilmore numerous hugs for his brilliant performance. That's all fine, apparently.
Lots of 14-minute games of table tennis.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, 14-minute 58, they go, split.
That's it.
Now you can't.
I don't want Scotland to lose any more players either, but I would just love to know the circumstances in which these two players have had to sit this game. Is this a public relations thing of, this idea that we have to double down on this? Now the cat's out of the bag, it looked bad to the nation that these two players who may or may not have had contact suddenly are told they can play. Well, people say, oh, it's double standards. It's one rule for football, one rule for everybody else. It doesn't mean it's right, but it looks like we've been incredibly belt and braces about this. Or are the players being punished for breaking the protocol? Well, should they not have spoken to another player for 20 minutes? I think we need some explanation.
20 minutes seems quite a long time after a game, doesn't it? You say, cheers, mate, well played, and then back to your own dressing room and then go to bed. But Ewan Murray, the Guardian's Scottish football correspondent, and Matt Ford, who's very jingoistically English, big England fan, are having a sort of row on Twitter about this, and Barry's Glenn Denning is in this conversation. But basically,
Matt is separating them? He's saying, look, boys,
it's not worth it.
He's not worth it.
But he's not getting too close to separate them, obviously, because then they'd all have to isolate. But you know, Baz stops saying, look, there's nothing daft about asking the question, exactly the question that you've asked.
You need to know, don't you?
There are protocols in place that allow teams to travel, to train, to stay in hotels, to share dressing rooms. That is how we have had football for the last 15 months.
Mm.
Okay. And clearly, we can only presume that Gilmore, Chilwell and Mount broke those protocols, and that's what happened.
Well, that's why we need to know. And surely there's someone within the setups of the SFA and the FA to monitor that, you would think, and say, lads, you know, think about the protocols, etc. Maybe they've been dobbed in by someone at UEFA. There's thousands of Blazers, Iago-like, lurking in the shadows, waiting to dob you in at any UEFA game. So that's quite possible as well. But an explanation would be nice, I think, as to what has exactly gone on. If you were there, Let us know. But one of the things I want to get you going on very quickly, this is a rugby story. We'd like to hear from you this afternoon. Tom Youngs has got a 2-week ban and a fine. And also, because he had a go at a referee, said a referee wasn't strong enough with a bit of an expletive in there. But not only that, quite creatively, they have decided to make him do a referee's course to appreciate the role of the official and then referee two kids' games. So, not just the fine, not just the ban, referee two kids' games after you've done a referee's course. And that is quite a creative punishment. So, we're interested, maybe the ones you handed out or were given, but punishments you've come across, creative ones in the past. Did we have a couple of those? A
couple of those. The tin boonie in primary school. Myself and a friend wouldn't stop talking in class. The supply teacher in charge punished us by sending us outside to play in the sun. That got us told. John says...
That's quite dangerous. Yeah. You couldn't do that now, could you?
Back in the 80s, when child ridicule was seen as character forming, I was caught messing about in the school gym by our teacher. I was made to stand outside the staff room for the rest of the day with a beanbag on my head. Never did me any harm, this says is the John. Thing.
There's kids listening today saying, oh, you couldn't do that now. Oh, no, they didn't think twice in those days, kids.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Jonathan Wilson is with us, football writer and author, and you're writing at the weekend about the format of this tournament, Jonathan. We got a kind of night last night, but you looked at the games initially and thought, yeah, not much is going to come out of that. But we got all the excitement of the Denmark game. So what do you make of the tournament and the format generally?
I hate the format. So 5 years ago in France, I sort of thought that what I hated was the bloatedness of the competition. I saw there were too many weak teams there. And if you look at, for that tournament, if you look at the best 16 qualifiers, and you look at the 16 teams who got to the last 16, there's only one difference. So we spent, 36 games swapping Hungary for Austria 5 years ago, and that felt pretty futile to me. this time it hasn't felt as bad. I think the football's been generally of a higher standard. I think it's been more attacking, it's been more entertaining, but I still hate the format. Mm. I just don't like when you're comparing across groups. I think best runner-up is a really... it's just a concept that leads, it loses integrity from the sport. So, for instance, we knew yesterday, the Finland-Belgium game, although weirdly it was never mentioned on the BBC commentary, I don't know why, but we knew because Ukraine had lost early in the day that if Finland drew, they were through. Mm. They might be second in the group, or they might be one of the best third-place teams. Because they knew that Switzerland had 4 points and a minus one goal difference, they knew Ukraine had 3 points, and Finland drawing would have given them 4 points and a zero goal difference. So better than two others, therefore one of the best four, therefore they go through. Mm-hmm. And that, I'm sure, conditioned the finish approach. And if you watch that game, first hour, nothing happens. There's one shot from Doku and that's it. Yeah. And then slowly Belgium begin to assert themselves. And you can see Lukaku getting more and more worked up because he was obviously desperate to help himself and get some cheap goals for the golden boot. But nobody else was sort of moving. So that game was very, very flat, at least until the Belgians had taken the lead. But it's just fundamentally unfair on a number of levels. So the fact Finland knew a draw would be enough, and Group D, Group E, Group F, they know what they have to do, exactly what they have to do, mm-hmm. Which is an advantage that teams in Groups A and B just don't have. Mm. And so, you might know that if you lose by one goal fewer, if you're in Group F, then you go through. So you push that much harder. You might know a draw's enough. You don't have to press for the win. And that clearly conditions how you play. But it also means that you almost get doubly punished for having a difficult draw.
Yeah.
So if you're Hungary, for instance, and you've got Portugal, France and Germany, then not only are you not likely to get in the top two, but if you do finish third somehow, you're probably not going to have as many points as a team in a weaker group who might draw and win a game. So...
How do we fix it? Is 32 teams the way to fix it?
I mean, I think that's the lesser of evils at the minute, probably. Yeah. I mean, there's other ways you could do it. You could say, right, we'll have 20 teams and we'll mm-hmm. have four groups of five and the top two go through. That might lead to a couple of dead rubbers. Obviously, not every match day would... Every match day you'd have one team not playing. That's how the Rugby World Cup does it. You'll never hear me say football should follow rugby in any other context. Fundamentally, we had a tournament that was perfect. 16 teams is perfect. Four groups of four, top two.
And like the games, straight away, they're all like France, Germany, aren't they?
Yeah, and there's an incredible level of quality. And occasionally you did get smaller teams got through. So, you know, Latvia getting there in 2004 was a great story for Latvia. Had Slovenia had got there in 2000. So smaller nations can get there. But I guess then, you know, you have this fundamental question. What is a tournament for? If it's to determine who is the best team in Europe, well, you'd probably just play home and away on the league system, and that wouldn't have the same appeal. Is it for spreading the game as far as possible and letting every nation have a feel of being in a tournament? Well, okay, well, let's have all 55 there. Let's just have one enormous tournament. That doesn't feel right either. It's some kind of compromise between the two. And the other fact, and it's slightly different this time around because obviously the pandemic has changed everything and the fact it's spread across Europe has changed everything. But what was nice about that 16-team format was most countries could host it, or at least they could, in partnership with a neighbour, could host it. So yeah, Austria-Switzerland 2008 was a great tournament. As a journalist, I could get I was based in Bern, but I could get to all four Swiss venues and Innsbruck very, very easily.
Hmm.
And so you could go to a lot of football.
And from a fan's point of view, you're ensconced in one country or two countries and you share that and you meet fans from other nations in those countries. So you get a tour and you meet sort of like-minded people in that kind of hub of that country or those two countries, which is what a tournament ultimately is.
Yeah, and I'm sure anybody who's been to a tournament, the things obviously you'll remember the football, but you'll also remember just the nights out you have, or the times you just bump into people. So from Russia, I remember like every restaurant you went into, there were Peruvian people. I think there were 40,000-odd Peruvians made the trip to Russia. And all they did was eat and drink. Like being a Peruvian fan looked brilliant. I remember one of my fondest memories in Russia, I took the train from Nizhny Novgorod to Kazan the night of Russia v. Egypt. And there was a Russian lad was able to get the game on his phone, and there's about 20 people crowded round watching the game on his phone, and everyone was, you know, in whatever languages we knew was sort of talking about the game, and that was this great sense of football coming together. Or and if a host nation really gets behind it, I remember I was in Rancagua in 2015 for Copa America in Chile. Rancagua is, although it happened to be where England were based in 1962, it's a tiny place. It's a mining town in. It's about an hour outside Santiago. And it appeared nothing exciting had happened in Rancagua at all between 1962 and 2015. So we turned up off a train from Santiago, and there were volunteers there, sort of, you saw your lanyard. Basically, if you had a lanyard, you were in clover. They were giving you drinks, they were carrying your bags. And they got a load of kids, load of Down syndrome kids, wearing chef's uniforms, handing out biscuits they made. It was just a lovely touch that the whole town coming together to celebrate this event.
Mm.
And it feels to me that's when you have these enormous tournaments where only the biggest countries can host them, only the biggest cities can host games, you lose a lot of that sense of community, which is what makes tournaments special.
Like I was saying about 2026, it's not been totally agreed, but 48 teams, this is Canada, USA, Mexico, might have 16 groups of three. There might be a group P. You know, how far down can you go? Group P.
Group,
you know, not
P.
Even in a tournament if you're in Group P.
But I mean, that's not really the issue with that. The issue there is if it's the top two to go through into a round of 32, then there's a lot of scope for the teams playing the last group game for collusion.
Yeah.
As in 82.
As in 82.
Which we feared, Jesse, in Austria. We expected the disgrace of Hihong, didn't we, to be repeated in that game. But it
was an uncharacteristically interesting performance from Austria.
Austria decided to go and win it, much to the annoyance of Ukraine.
But, I mean, England could... If it hadn't been for previous results, if we hadn't known England and Czech Republic were already through, they could have played out a draw today to make sure that they both went through, and Scotland and Croatia definitely didn't.
Yeah.
And that's a problem with the format.
Who are your, finally, Jonathan, who are your winners of this tournament?
France, really boringly.
But, yeah.
I mean, Italy have been, I expected them to be quite good. They've been a lot better than I expected them to be. So Italy look the closest challengers. But France, just the depth they have, the tournament knowledge they have, the solidity they have, I find it very hard to look beyond them.
England, Scotland and Wales then, do you see, how do you see those faring?
I think it's... I mean, Scotland might get through. I guess it's a 50-50 call.
Mm.
It's very hard, I think, given the way the draw is, to see either England or Scotland going further. Wales possibly have a chance to get into the quarters. I think it's not the worst draw, but I mean, Denmark have that great momentum, that head of steam. They're sort of they're the popular team now, aren't they?
Sure.
And I think I mean, both the way they played against Belgium and then the way they finished against Russia, there is that great sense of momentum. And I think they're actually playing better now than they... I mean, remember them in the Nations League when they were solid and a bit uninspiring. They look better now. They've getting Damsgaard into the team, I think, has given them an extra... his dribbling ability has given them something a bit extra going forward. But they do have that sense of something, some greater purpose, which... as we know,
absolutely. Yeah.
So I think it's going to be hard for Wales, but you know, it's only Denmark. It's not.
It's true. It should, as I say, I think it's going to be a really good game. So that's one of the good things about that draw.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
It's Denmark who will go through. It's second place in Group B. It's been an outstanding performance on and off the field. The dark days of that opening game are behind them now. You wonder how far this Danish side can go. Full time at the Parken Stadium. Believe me, it's party time in Copenhagen tonight. It's Russia 1, Denmark 4.
That's our commentator Mark Wilson on the final whistle last night over on TalkSport 2. And we're going to speak now to a man who was in the stadium last night watching that all unfold. It's journalist Christian Volney. Good afternoon, Christian.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
So where does that sit in epic nights of Danish football? You've witnessed quite a few over the years and have had some big moments, but where does that one sit for you?
Well, the golden oldies here talk about that this could actually match the legendary night in 85 when Denmark beat the former Soviet Republic with 4-2. It's up there. So 30 years, biggest event in 30 years, judging from the people who lived them both.
You took that video of... You took a video of when the players and the manager were looking at their phone
in the
huddle to see when they, you know, that they had actually qualified. It was a wonderful moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I spoke to the team lead afterwards. It was his phone they were holding and he couldn't get internet connection, so they were a bit late. But in the end, he got the message and it was a beautiful moment because, of course, they needed to know, even if they felt that everything was good, they still needed Belgium to win and get the confirmation before they knew that they achieved what they wanted to. So it was kind of an extra joy on a beautiful night.
I mean, I think everybody outside of Russia was willing them to win and progress last night because of what happened to Christian Eriksen and the reaction to that and the way they were made to play that game straight afterwards. I take it that the Danish nation is feeling the love a little bit. Is it because of that?
There's an tremendous pride here, and it's not just because the team has won. It's also because they won the respect and the love from so many other countries, and we feel it here, and it means something. We're a small country, and normally we really care what other things think about us, but in this case, the love has been felt, and it means a lot, not just to the players, but to everyone here. So I think you're right, and I think it's become very clear and obvious that this has become a story and a scenario that people are following around the world, and it just makes everything stronger here.
And it, you know, and it is, people have said it before, it's bigger than football. It almost doesn't matter. You know, if you won yesterday but hadn't gone through, it probably wouldn't have mattered. If you win against Wales, it probably doesn't matter. And in that way, you sort of sense that this team are kind of liberated in that sense.
But that's what we've been telling each other here, that we've won even if we lose. And in that case, you guarantee that it will be a good ending no matter what. But for the coach and for the players, they needed to win. They needed to qualify. They wanted to do it. And when it happened yesterday, it was just a huge relief. And I 2 hours after the match, you still heard the music from the dressing room. No one had come out yet. It was, and the training today has been cancelled. The press activities have been delayed 6 hours. So I think they deserved the celebration. I know they had one.
And all roads lead to Christian Eriksen. Where do they play the next game? Amsterdam Arena, where his professional career took off.
Yeah, it's kind of following his tracks, isn't it? Who knows if we'll end up at Wembley at some point, where he also used to play at a season. So who knows?
Yeah. So it was the performance. They were great goals, and it was a great performance, and it built on what they did against Belgium. And again, I think it was a great deal of sympathy for going out against one of the big hitters of the tournament, coming so close, doing such a good job, still not getting the result. And I think that led to a lot of people feeling, you know, that Denmark did deserve something from this tournament and a chance to progress in it.
I think you're right. And I think when we spoke to the players and the coach in between the Belgium match and the Russia match, they all felt that they were going to do this. They all felt, because of the performance against Belgium, that the performance is there, the level is there. Now it's just about getting the goals. And they never really doubted, even if it looked, I mean, the odds were against Denmark. Even if they won, they still needed results elsewhere. But it's the belief in this team, even if they lost their best player and even if they had this traumatic experience, the belief is strong. And they said it before the tournament. They think they can win it. And now, even if you lose Christian Eriksen, there's something different now. There's something new because of what they've been through and because of the support and the love. There is something strong in this team, and I think they have a renewed sense that this, they can go far.
And what was the biggest noise? Was it with the Christensen goal? Was it when they found out that Belgium had actually scored? What was the biggest noise in the stadium last night?
It kind of all came at the same time. Christensen scored, Belgium scored, and just before that, there was the opposite reaction because Russia had a very doubtful penalty, which came just 2 seconds after the Belgium goal was cancelled in Russia. So you had these two things within 5 minutes. But I think the biggest cheer was when Denmark scored 3-1, and then you heard Belgium was up 1-0, and this time VAR didn't interfere. And from that there on, it was just one big party.
Finally, Danish fans or Welsh fans, sadly, won't be able to travel to Amsterdam for the game. But you, as a working journalist, can you get there or not?
Well, it's still a question mark because today we just heard that this. Well, you guys are not in it anymore because you chose to leave. But there is some kind of European Union decision being made on Saturday that if you have a Corona passport, which means that you're either vaccinated or can be proof that you already had it, you're allowed to travel within the European Union from Saturday. And if that comes through, then, well, we can go. Right now, 25,000 Danish people are waiting to get a ticket. And we've heard that the shirts, the national team shirts, even if you produce twice as many as they normally do, it's completely sold out. So many people want to go. Many people will go if they're allowed to. So let's see what happens.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Good afternoon, it's Paul Hawksby and Max Rushton here on TalkSport, continuing the build-up to tonight's Euro 2020 games involving England and Scotland, both of which are on the TalkSport network. Now, Max, as we were just saying before, Fletch brought us the news and sport. A team has been leaked. I mean, I think the leak last week was pretty spot-on, wasn't it?
Yeah, this is from Matt Law in The Telegraph, saying the team is Pickford in goal, a back four of Walker, Stones, Maguire and Shaw, Rice and Phillips in front of them, Sterling, Grealish and Saka. Saka coming off the right then with Harry Kane up front. Yeah. So, I mean, my first question is quite interesting. Is, you know, the league was accurate. I think I was just before I went on air at Wembley before the Croatia game saying Trippier's left back, and everyone's like, where's that come from? And we just discussed that a lot. Obviously saying we might be wrong. But it does seem strange that these teams keep leaking out. Yeah. It seems like not a sensible idea to keep... To have the teams keep leaking out. Who's leaking the team? Surely they'd say
somebody.
This is the team, but please don't tell anyone, because
what often happens is that someone's got a mate in the squad and they say, "Are you playing? Yeah, I'm playing. What about you? He's playing as well." And in the end, it doesn't take long to put the team together, and then it's out there.
A big deal. But maybe the Czech team has been released, and we just aren't quite as obsessed about who's coming in off the right.
Bielsa announced it a week before. I mean, Saka off the right. In the three behind Kane is interesting because he has done that for Arsenal with Aubameyang and Lacazette, hasn't he? And he's been, I think, when he's played it, been quite successful. I was just taking a look online and there was Arsenal fans saying there was one game against Leicester, might have been season before last, where he played there and set up a goal, and the Leicester player was trying to show him, thinking going to show him outside. So he said, "All right then, I'll go outside," putting a perfect cross with his right, and Arsenal scored.
Sure. I mean, I think some people will be saying, you know, you're saying there was one game against Leicester. Yeah, you know, Dortmund fans might be saying Jadon Sancho has been doing this. I don't want to sound like a caller.
On the right of a three.
On the right of a three, naturally on the right of three for so long. Yeah. What you have to say is we're not at training every day.
No, we don't know.
And managers have their favourites and they don't. I really thought, it's interesting, I'm pretty sure Saka wasn't even in the 23 because you've got to leave three out, haven't you? Hmm. I'm pretty sure Saka wasn't in the 23 for the Scotland game.
Right.
Maybe Southgate's looking at this and sort of saying that we are qualified. I would have loved to have seen Sancho there because I think there are lots of fans that haven't watched him at all. And I know that when he's played for England, he hasn't lit up for England yet. But
you know. I saw a conversation on Sky Germany between some pundits and they don't get it. They said clearly they've not seen this boy play.
And Southgate talks about his experience, but he's played more Champions League games than I think, you know, if you add up half the players, you know, obviously more than Pickford and, you know, more than Rice and Phillips,
and
of course,
Saka.
You know, and Saka, of course. Yeah. So
I think it's quite interesting. I'm glad Grealish looks like he's starting in the 10. I think is interesting.
And I like Saka as a player, and he's a good supply line.
I do
and
agree
should,
with you.
If Kane makes those runs that we hope he can make, then I think Saka's a good player to supply them, you know.
So it's coming home is what you're saying.
Well, that's what I'm definitely saying is it's coming home. We asked you earlier on off the back of a story from the World of Rugby. Tom Youngs has been fined and has got a suspension for having a go at a referee, swearing and saying that this referee wasn't strong enough. But the interesting part of the punishment was that they said he had to do a referee's course to get a feel for what officials go through. And he had to referee two kids' games. We thought, what an interesting punishment. So you've told us this afternoon about some of the interesting punishments you handed out or were given.
Yeah, Mark says, my favourite was at school when a passing teacher pulled someone out of a rowdy class before the class teacher arrived, made him take his chair, put it in the middle of an empty schoolyard and pretend to row for 10 minutes on his chair.
Andy in East Dulwich, Liverpool and Wigan rugby fan, says, me and a friend accidentally knocked an old lady down the stairs on a school trip to a Catholic retreat in Keswick. We were banned from going to the chippy that night and had to write an essay on manners. I've had impeccable manners ever since, and I'm really out the chippy, says Andy. So thank you for that. The old lady was all right.
One from Tim. My mate was caught smoking, the sort of classic one, at the age of 14. His dad made him smoke a pack of cigars as a punishment. He now smokes cigars.
See, that's not... That really... That badly backfired, didn't it? There was one particularly bad one coming... There was one you brought us earlier wasn't there?
It's a really grim one, yes. So your story of being made to stand with a beanbag on your head in the 80s is a punishment that wouldn't happen now, pales into insignificance compared to an event that happened at my grammar school in 1957. The major enforcer of discipline was an ex-Royal Marine who headed the woodwork department. A boy in the year ahead of me started to grow sideburns. Teddy boys were all the rage. He was told to shave them off. He didn't. One morning, the ex-Marine grabbed him, dragged him into the woodwork workshop and had him held by the chair with his cronies and then shaved his sideburns off with a chisel. Nothing happened. A chisel. I mean, let's say, you know, when people say, oh, it's not like it used to be, well, good.
Yeah,
you know?
You can't be taking people's sideburns off
prison
with a chisel.
For that. Yeah.
Different times, kids. That wouldn't happen.
Yeah. Don't chisel your bodies. If you learn nothing from today's show, that's the advice.
Don't do anything on a human being with a chisel.
Correct.
So, if you take nothing away from today's show.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Now, you can't beat a quirky tournament story. So we end today with that and, you know, sort of flush with the enthusiasm and the joy of seeing his nation back in a major tournament. David Little from Glasgow, a Scotland fan, decided to go on a bit of a quest. He decided to visit... a street featuring the names of all the players in the Scotland squad.
It's quite a nice montage in front of me.
And yes, joining us now, David Little. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon. Hello.
So, what was the kind of springboard for this? What was the what made you think this would be a good idea?
I'm not sure if it was a good idea or not. But I was in the idea came to me when I was in Glasgow City Centre and I passed by Robertson Street, and then the idea just kicked off from there.
So you said, I want to visit. So you took a picture of Robertson Street, said, now we're going to go to a street featuring the names of all the 26 squad players.
Yeah, exactly. And I was initially going to just keep it in Glasgow and just get all the players I could in Glasgow. But then I thought, that's not very fair, missing a few players out. So I travelled as far as it took to get a street for every player.
All right, who was the hardest one to get? I mean, did you decide to do this before the 26 and you were waiting for the 26 to come out and just say, like, hope every Robertson's picked. I don't want a tough one. What was the toughest name to get?
Well, there was a few tough ones. I had to take a train down to Stoke for four. So Tierney Street and Hanley Street and Cooper Road. We're all in Stoke, so those were the top ones.
So that's good. You managed to go to Stoke, but get a few in Stoke.
Yeah. If I could get it in Stoke, if I couldn't get it in Glasgow, Edinburgh, or the Central Belt, luckily there was a few in Stoke, so that was quite awesome.
Who knew Stoke was the play? Did you do anything else in Stoke, or just go, right, Street 1, Street 2, Street 3, home?
Yeah, it was pretty much Street 1, Street 2, Street 3, home. there wasn't a lot of sightseeing or anything.
Did you get any funny looks or I wonder why you...
No, I don't know what he's
doing.
They
probably thought it was from the council. People saying it was about time they changed that street sign, yeah.
I got plenty of funny looks taking selfies in the corner of McKenna Drive or somewhere like that. Yeah, it was some strange places to take.
And when they asked you, did you say, oh yeah, I'm a Scotland fan, I've come down to take photographs of every street name in the Scotland? Did you explain to anybody while you were there?
Nobody really asked. They just,
that's quite a lot. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Do you often go up to people in the street, Paul, and ask them what they're doing here? Yeah. Just leave them to it.
Well, I suppose I'm not that inquisitive, but there are. Well, if you see someone in your street taking a picture of the street signs and taking selfies with the street, you immediately think local authority. What are they going to do? They're going to be digging up the road next week.
Yeah,
you know,
possible.
Where am I going to park my car?
That's a good point.
Yeah, get a bit NIMBY about it.
Where do you take this now, David? Do you get on the list of every single Scottish footballer of all time and try and complete the entire set?
I know, it's a good question. I had to cheat for McGinn Street. There was no McGinn Street or McTominay Street anywhere in the UK I could find, except McGinn Street. There's one in Northern Ireland, so maybe I'll go over there.
Right. If you're going to do it properly, you might, you know, there's
you've
no point.
You've got to commit. You've got to commit, David, for goodness
sake. Exactly, I know. And exactly.
No
McGinn deserves it.
No McTominay Gardens.
I know. I think he needs a street named after him when we...
Well, if they win the Euros of Scotland, then they're all going to get a street named after him, and this will be a doddle, won't it? Probably about 10 yards from your house, you'll be able to do the lot. So when they rename roads in honour...
There's a McGinn Hill in Vermont, which is sort of near Indian Lake. I think the nearest city you can get is sort of...
I think Ireland's closer.
And that's true. But yeah, that could be a more fun adventure, couldn't it? Once you've done it in...
McTominay Road, I'm just putting in. I'm sure you've done all of this.
I can't find any McTominay.
Okay.
I did Scott Street for that one.
Yeah, okay. Right. Well, if somebody is living in Alaska and they live in McTominay Road, do let us know and we'll pass it on to David. What about tonight then? Let's then move on to the football. How confident are you? You're a young Scotland fan. You haven't felt the pain of all those near misses, have you? So are you feeling quite optimistic?
I felt plenty of pain for the near misses. But I'm feeling optimistic. I think we can get a result tonight. And they know what they have to do. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Where are you watching?
I'll be at a pub with a couple of friends.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm just Googling, like, McTominay Aqueduct.
Yeah, we've lost him now. Have you found one? McTominay Falls?
McTominay Falls, and it just had Wembley Stadium. I don't know if he fell over on Friday night, but that's what I've got. Well, I'll keep... I've got something to do now between now and kickoff, haven't I?
Yes, yeah, good. Keep you busy.
Just to keep me busy.
Well done, David. Good work, and enjoy the match tonight.
Great, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, David.
There we are, David Little there from Glasgow, went in search of all 26 squad members. So there we, you know, it's nice to have a bit of a quirky story. Well,
something to do, isn't it? So you got nothing to do, why not?
So this evening, what do you think, Max? What are you going to get? Go and stick your neck. Go for a score. What do you think?
Well, I was saying to you off air, the trouble is, right, I'm watching the game, but I'm watching social media at the same time, which is my first mistake. So 5 minutes in, someone's already angry that, you know, someone's either played a long ball or hasn't played a long ball. There's someone angry that we haven't knocked it long. There's someone angry that we've kept possession. So I'm just, so I tell everyone to relax and be patient. Then by about 70 minutes, I'm getting impatient myself, but I can't let anyone know that I've got impatient. So I end up just getting annoyed with people who are impatient. So
well,
I might
keep off social
I'm
media.
I'm going to keep. I mean, it's a lesson for life, isn't it?
Enjoy the
I'm
game.
Just going to enjoy the game.
Put your phone
believe,
down.
I think we'll win. And the thing about planning for the group is you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. Portugal could beat France. Hungary could beat Germany.
Yeah.
You don't know. Let's go out there, be positive. If you're in the stadium, support the team.
Yeah, get behind the lads.
Get behind
in
them.
Both stadiums.
Absolutely.
Enjoy the games tonight. Myself and Max will be back from 1 tomorrow.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Well, there we are. That was this afternoon's show. We're back tomorrow. We'll be poring over those results, I'm sure.
Yeah. What a wonderful evening. A 3-0 victory for England.
Yeah.
A hat-trick for Harry Kane.
Scotland
last-minute winner
from
Lyndon Dykes. Perfect.
Yeah, that's it. And we'll all be in a very happy mood. All three home nations through when you hear from us tomorrow. Fingers crossed.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.